And take this opportunity to welcome those that are visiting in our audience. We have that you're here. We hope that you
social media in the last couple of weeks have been having a biblical discussion, if you can believe that. And the biblical discussion is centered around the subject of man's happiness, on what truly will make a person happy. And does God want a person to be happy? And whatever he does, it really doesn't matter to God. God just wants man to be happy. So this morning and this evening, I'd like to talk to you about that from God's perspective. When I ask the question, I would be happy if. Many times people are looking in life, and rightfully so, that they are looking for some degree of peace and happiness. And that's fine. That's what our Constitution is based upon. The man and his right of liberty to, in his pursuit of happiness. And again, there's nothing wrong with happiness. And I believe that we're going to examine the day that God wants us to be happy. But we need to make sure we understand what that means in being happy. And so sometimes in the world that we live in, people express that they would be happy if I were. If there was just something about their life, they were something, or if something were solved, then that would make them happy. Or if they had a certain thing, or they had a certain value in life, then that would make them happy. And then if I could do something, or if something could be done, then that would bring me happy. And we often talk about the grass being greener on the other side of the fence. But I've often, I got a friend of mine that has a little statuette in his office that said, yes, the grass is greener on the other side of the fence, but both still need to be mowed, and I believe that's true. That things are not always what they appear to be. There's a book that says the grass is greener where you water. And I believe that's a good concept, and I want to talk to you today about how we can have happiness that's really biblically sound happiness. Happiness that will produce good in our lives and produce a life that will be an encouragement and example to others. But as in any subject, we need to define what we mean when we say happy. Happy is defined as delighted, pleased, and glad as over a particular thing. To be happy to see a person. Sometimes when we're separated from people we love and our family, we see them. We don't see them on a regular basis, and we get to go to where they live, or they come to where we live. We're happy to see them. We're generally happy because we're in their presence again. Characterized by an indicative of pleasure, contentment, or joy. A happy mood, a happy frame of mind. And you know what? We need to have that happy frame of mind. We need to look for things that will bring us this happy mood in this happy frame of mind. But the problem is where you seek to find that happiness. And that's where we would differ greatly in the world's understanding of that and our understanding of that. A lot of people, happiness is defined in terms of having every desire fulfilled. Some people think that the only way true happiness is ever attained is if they have everything they desire. If everything they want, they have it fulfilled, then that is the only thing that can assure a person to be happy. Then, most of them define happiness as a life of wealth, of pleasure, and constant fun. No accountability, no responsibility, no worry, no is not the same as the world's concept of happiness. I'm going to illustrate this in a situation that happened to me many years ago. Years ago, when I was in the military, I was a supervisor, and I had a number of people that were working under me. And one of them was a young lady who had no religious affiliation, didn't practice any religion, was not a religious person, was very worldly, and I just used that term as to define the type of person she was. She was a nice person. She was a good worker, and we grew in our respect one for another when she worked for me. But we were sitting around, as we sometimes did it, towards the end of the day on Friday, when I was busy doing paperwork and the day was coming to a close. And we were just sitting around and they were talking, and there was six or eight of us there. And she said, "Keith, can I ask you a question?" I said, "Sure." She said, "You are the most unhappy person that I've ever met." Well, that's quite a conclusion you draw. I said, can I ask you why you think I'm unhappy, or why you perceive that I'm unhappy?" He said, "Well, you don't drink, you don't smoke, you don't go out, you don't mingle." He said, "That's a really boring life." He said, "There's no joy in that at all." I said, "Teresa," I said, "the problem is what you define happiness as and what I define happiness as. I believe being with my children, going out and enjoying things with my wife, going out and enjoying, I love the water. I'm on the water, and that's something I pass down to my children. They're water dogs, all of them. And that's something that I really enjoy. And I get a happiness out of life. I don't think there's joy in drinking and carousing and going. I don't find any joy or happiness in that. And I can tell you by my own experiences in the military that I know a lot of people that thought they'd find joy in that, but at the end of the night, it didn't work out too well. And so I just believe it depends on how you define happiness. And unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, we live in a time when many people believe that being a Christian means that you can't have happiness in your life. That if you're a Christian, it's just going to shackle you down, and you're going to be unable to enjoy the good things of life. One of the things that really bother me, as per se, is some of the language and some of the things that the world does to get us messed up. And if you've noticed, if you watch any sporting events, one of the things that always happens today is the beginning of the football season, which I'm sure all the football team fans are real pleased about. But as it be, they have these commercials, and many of them are alcoholic commercials. I find it interesting to me that they outlawed tobacco commercials because they thought they were bad and that they sent the wrong message, but don't seem to have any problem with having those alcohol commercials. One of the commercials they have is by a company called Old Milwaukee, and they call Milwaukee Beer. And it shows this pristine scene on the water where they're fishing and they're having a great time, and then they're sitting at the campfire at night and they're talking and they're drinking their Old Milwaukee, and at the bottom of the thing it says, "It just doesn't get any better than this." But brethren, that's the world's concept of happiness. That's the world's understanding how everything is aligned in peace in their world and what brings them happiness. But I want to challenge you this morning that that's a flawed message. And that really doesn't tell the whole story. And that really masks what really brings a person true happiness in life. What many think will make them happy may indeed bring temporary pleasure in a false sense of well-being and fulfillment. But that will not bring continual happiness. And let me give you one biblical example. In the beginning, Adam and Eve, in the Garden of Eden, here is God who created the world and everything in it. He made man last. And then he created woman and gave her to man and instituted the relationship of marriage. And after he instituted the relationship of marriage, he that they had dominion, and that means authority, over all the things that he had created. And he put them in the Garden of Eden and told them to till it and to take care of it, and that they could eat of every tree that was in the garden, except the tree that was in the midst of the garden. And the tree in the midst of the garden, there was a tree called the knowledge of good and evil. And he told them of that tree you should not eat. For in the day that you eat of it, thou shalt surely die. And in Genesis chapter 3, we are introduced to the serpent, who comes along and asks the woman, Eve, the question, has God said that thou shalt not eat of all the trees of the garden? He said, no, we can eat of them all except one. The tree that's in the midst of the garden, we can't eat that one. For if we eat it, God says, in the day that we eat it, we shall die. Now, two things from that statement. Number one, she understood what God said. She perfectly understood what God had said and understood that that tree was forbidden. Number two was that she had made a decision at that moment, that she was going to adhere to what God said. But then Satan, in the form of the serpent, said, you shall not surely die. For God knows that in the day that you eat of it, you'll be like God, and you will know to be able to discern between good and evil. Now, she told her part of the truth, but he didn't tell her all the truth. And so verse 6 is very telling. In verse number 6, it says she looked on the truth. And in Genesis 3 and verse 6, here is a definition of the allurement of sin. It says, when a woman saw that the tree was good for food, lust of the eyes, and that it was a lust of the flesh, it was good for food, and that it was delight to the eyes, lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the tree was desirable to make one wise, that's the pride of life, she took of its fruit and ate, and when she gave also to her husband with her, and he did eat. You see, she determined that tree would make her happy, that tree would make her like God, that she'd be able to know good and evil. And the next verse said that when they ate it, their eyes were open, and they knew that they were naked. Now, did that bring them happiness when they knew that they were naked? No, because then they went to sow fig leaves in order to cover themselves, and later on, when God comes into the garden, in the cool of the day, they hide themselves in shame because they know they were naked. Where's all the happiness that Satan promised? Was it there? And let me ask you something. Did that decision change their lives? It certainly did. They were cast from the presence of God. They were separated from God. And they were cast out of the Garden of Eden. And they were punished by God for their transgressions. Now, are they like God now? No, they're not like God. And they could never be like God. That is a promise that cannot be delivered. Man is created. God is eternal. Man can never be like God. But it's always a treat man to be like God. And if he could be like God, if I could do anything, if I knew the future, if I could know what would happen tomorrow, or I knew what would happen 5 years from now, or if I knew, if I put my money here, that it's going to bring me enough money for my retirement. If I just knew all those things, I'd be happy. It is an illusion. It's an illusion. Alcohol and drugs. How many people have destroyed their lives, their family, and even their happiness looking for it in a bottle or in a drug they put up their nose and cheating with? How many people have paid the ultimate price searching for happiness where it can never be found? And then we have materialism, the greatest problem for mankind. Materialism. And it's really a problem in our culture and in our nation because we are very greatly blessed. And so materialism can consume us to where we think we can't be happy unless we have the new electrical gadget, we have the new phone, if we have the new TV, if we have the new car, and we can't, but we just, you know the old saying, trying to keep up with the Joneses. We got to have materialism in order to bring us happiness. selfish desires. We certainly think life's all about me. We think it all revolves around me. And we think as long as I'm happy, I really don't care about what other people think. As long as I'm happy, then that's the main thing. And then we have unlawful relationships. Today, one out of every two marriages is divorced. That means that there are a lot of people in remarriages, and many of them are unlawful. Many of them, God says, is adulterous, and they are wrong. And I've known people, and you probably do too, that's in their fourth, fifth, sixth marriage, all of them looking for happiness in a physical relationship because they don't know how to maintain that relationship when they get in. And then you got sinful pleasure. I've been asked, and you have too. Is sin fun? Well, yeah. If it wasn't fun, it wouldn't be hard to get people to come out of it. It is fun. But the problem is, what kind of it? And how long does it last? Look in Hebrews chapter 11. They're talking about Moses. Now here is a man who was chosen by God to lead his people out of captivity. And as he would lead them out of captivity, he was trained in the household of Pharaoh. And so, as he was growing up as a man, he had every advantage of wealth. He had education. He had wealth. He had power. He was Pharaoh's grandson. He had all the advantages life could offer. But notice what he says in verse number 24 of Hebrews chapter 11. By faith, Moses, when he became an age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer the affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasure of sin. Yes, sin is pleasure, but it does not last, and it has no lasting value. Therefore, it is only temporary pleasure. And so, there is a choice that man's going to have to make about his happiness. If I were, if I had, if I could. And we always live that something's missing. Sometimes we're not happy because we think something's missing. Because we think there's something out there that we need or we want or something that would change in our lives that would bring us happiness. If I just had enough money. If I just had enough retirement savings. If I just had this, if I just had that, then I'd be happy. Do you know what you find out? When you got there, you wouldn't be happy. Let me give you a physical illustration. I was present. When he died, August 16, 1977, he had $1 million in his checkbook. But there was one of the most unhappy people that you've ever met. You do any reading about Elvis Presley, he lived a very unhappy life. He was loved by millions of people, still is. And still, to this day, makes a resounding amount of money in his estate because of the love and the admiration that people had for him. But he was a very unhappy and lonely man. Fame consumed his life. Could he go to the mall with his children, with Lisa Marie, like you could take your daughter or your granddaughter to the mall? Oh, he could go. He'd have to rent it out after midnight when it was closed, so he could go so people wouldn't mob him. He couldn't go to the amusement park. He had to rent the whole amusement park in order to take his child to the amusement park. He put tinfoil on his window so he could sleep during the day because he was up in his lifestyle at night. He took pills to wake him up. He took pills to put him to sleep. He took prescription drugs, things that are illegal, in order to be able to live this life that he thought would bring him happiness. And he died at the age of 42, a very unhappy person. He had money. He had admiration. He's probably one of the greatest entertainers that's ever lived in our life. What did he get him? Brethren, everything is not what it appears. We have to find things that have some lasting and enduring quality. verse number 1, Jeremiah was like, righteousness are you, O Lord, when I plead with you, and let me talk with you about your judgment. Why do the way of the wicked prosper? Why are those happy who deal toll treacherously? Pseudo happiness can be found in sin, and what I mean by pseudo, I mean counterfeit. I mean pretend. It sometimes looks as if evil people have a lot of advantage. They seem to have money. They seem to have all the necessities of life. Seem to have friends. They seem to just have everything. Don't seem to have any problems in their life. Don't seem to have anything outwardly that causes them any worry or anxiety. And so we think that that brings happiness. But brethren, all those things come with the flesh. If you had all the money, and you had all your future intact, and yet you did not have God, you've got nothing. You've got nothing. And that's what the world's sadly going to find out. It's Malachi 3, verse 15. So now we call the proud blessed. For those who do wickedness are raised up. They even tempt God and go free. I understand, and you do too, that many times it appears that the wicked go free, that they prosper, and there's no repercussion. There's no consequence for their actions. Oh, but there is. Because you don't see it, because you don't know it, does not mean it does not exist. Sometimes we are deceived by the illusion that if I had money, if I had possession, if I had authority, if I had power, if I had this, if I had that, then that would truly make me happy. If I was guaranteed to have good health till the day I die, and that I would pass very quickly from this life, that'd be happy. Would you? Would you be happy? Would that bring you happiness? True enduring happiness cannot be found in material things. That's why we're studying the book of Ecclesiastes. It cannot work. It will not work. Because why? Because it is fleeting. In the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon makes the statement over and over again. Vanity and vexation of life, vanity of vanities, striving after wind. Now, does that mean that riches are a bad thing? No. Does that mean driving new cars wrong? No. Does that mean having a nice home wrong? No. Does that mean having the luxuries of life is wrong or planning for your future? No, it doesn't mean any of that. But it means that if that's what you're basing your happiness on, in your physical things of this life, you will make a grave mistake. Because what's going to happen to the things of this life? You're not taking them with you. And they're only going to be something for your relative to fight over after you're gone. If you base your happiness on things, and on things of this life, and on what this life can give you, then you're going to find out that it's a very unhappy existence. Because it doesn't last, it is temporary. It has no enduring quality. A certain rich man, in Luke chapter 12, a certain rich man had a grand party. And he was so happy that he had so much produce, he didn't know where to put it. So he tore down his barn and built bigger barns. And then he stored all that stuff up. And he said, now I've got plenty for the future, for years, and I'll just sit back, take it easy, eat, drink, and be merry. But you know what God said in Luke 12, verse 20? He said, thou fool, tonight thy soul will be required of thee, and what shall all these things be? And what do you think about what he said? If you have everything this life can offer, and you don't have a monetary worry, or you don't have a physical worry about your life and the things of your life, but if you die this day, this very hour, will any of those things guarantee where you'll wake up when your eyes open on the other side? Think about that. That rich man thought he had the most important thing he didn't have, and that was a relationship. The Laodicea, they thought they were rich. They thought they had need of nothing. God said, you're wretched, you're poor, you're miserable. But yet they were rich. They were rich. They had everything, but he said, your true condition, you're wretched, poor, and miserable. Why? Because they had not had the proper relationship with God. You know, sometimes we can make this mistake with our children. I'm putting too much emphasis on this life. By putting too much emphasis on the things of this life and the things that you can gain and things that you can do in this life. You know what? I'm not against having fun, and I'm not against sports, and I'm not against education. I think all those things have their place. But none of them are more important than where my child is spending time. I don't care how much money they make. I don't care what kind of education they have. I want them to go to heaven. That's the most important thing about their life. You know why? Because what have I spent all my life as a father trying to do? Trying to keep my child from harm. Keep my child from experiencing some of the heartache and hardships of life that I've had. But why is it that we work so hard to make sure that that doesn't happen, but we fail in the most important thing that can happen, is that they can lose their soul? Brethren, there's nothing worse than a person who loses their soul. Nothing. No matter what happens to them in life, no matter whatever they ascertain to be, no matter what they experience, there's nothing that will equal the pain and the heartache and the misery that they're facing with God in the final day. That's the most important. Material wealth can be a source of many sorrows. Paul said that in 1 Timothy chapter 6. 1 Timothy chapter 6, passages are very familiar to us who are members of the Lord's church. It says, for we brought nothing into this world, it is certain that we can carry nothing out. Godliness with contentment is great gain, for the love of money is the root of all evil. But when men have strayed from the faith in their greediness, the curse ensues with many sorrows. You know, one of the wealthiest families that we've ever known in our culture, I guess in my lifetime, are the Kennedys. But yet I can tell you families that have more heartache, they have more terribleness happened to them than the Kennedys. And all the pain and anguish that they've had to endure over their century to their children, to their grandchildren, to their parents. What did all that money? It didn't make any of that go away. It didn't prevent any of that. Colossians chapter 3, Paul was right. If you then be buried with Christ, seek those things which are above, not the things of the children. See, it all is about coming with. All material things are going to pass away. That's why God said in 1 John chapter 2, love not this world, neither the things that are in the world. For all that is in the world is the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life. And these are of the world, and the world is passing away, and the lust therein. Everything that you and I know, everything you can touch, everything you can take, everything you can feel, everything you can look at, anything that you can possess, it's going up in smoke. It is not going up. It is not going to endure. Not even our body. Not even our physical bodies are going to endure. They're going to decay. They're going to defile. They're going to go back to the dust. They're not going to last either. The only thing that's going to last is the inner man. All the material wealth of this world will pass away soon. What is that going to do to my happiness if my happiness is in those material things? what's going to happen when those material things are gone? If my happiness is based on material. See, in the Bible, true and enduring happiness cannot be found by running from here to there. By being so busy in life, you're going to miss what's really important. Lot saw that the well-watered plains of Jordan and thought that he would be better off. Remember, given Abraham came to a part in the land, and there were so many of them, it began to be contention between his herdsmen and Abraham's herdsmen. And Abraham said, we don't want to have any strife. Let there not be any trouble between us. You choose to go the left, and I'll go the right. You choose the right, and I'll go the left. But you go ahead and make a choice. But you see, Abraham had the one to have the right of choice because he was the older one. He was the elder, and he would really have the right to make the choice. But he loved Lot. And what did Lot do? He looked at what he thought was better for him by sight. The well-watered plains of Sodom and Gomorrah. They'd be better for him in the future. How'd that work out? The Bible says in Genesis chapter 13 that the conduct of the people that lived in Sodom and Gomorrah, that is righteous soul danger. He lived in the matter of deep ungodliness. And it said, in fact, his soul dead. And in an upside of the Deborah would be destroyed by fire, and even some of Lot's family would choose to remain in Sodom and Gomorrah than flee the wrath of God. And even his wife went into the pillars because she had to look back as if she had left something behind. I often have people tell me, well, maybe she was looking back because of her children. Maybe so. But it cost her life. And God said, don't look back. She didn't leave. Every person, remember the debate, that Lot, what if I find 10 right people? What if I find 15? Remember he kept trying to get barter with God? Every person, the angel told Lot, you get your family and you get out of here and you get out of here now. He gave them an opportunity to leave. If they didn't take it, whose fault is it? Was it? Jay Opperman said that he's that the foolish man seeks happiness in the distance. The wise man grows in under his feet. Sometimes people spend their lives looking for something that's right in their own backyard. I heard a story one time about a man that determined that diamonds would make him happy. And he determined that he was going to go down a place in the world where diamonds were plentiful, and he was going to spend his life trying to find diamonds in the world. So he spent his life trying to find diamonds and get rich. Unfortunately, he died in that place. But the property that he sold to a fella that offered him a pretty good sum of money for it, he bought it, and he was out there doing some work on it one day, and he found this rock. He didn't know what it was. So he took it, and he took it into town, and it was the largest diamond that had ever been found. And that place where that diamond was found became, I think it's called the Field of Angels. It became one of the largest diamond excavation sites in the world, and it was in this man's own bed. He had what he thought right there where he was. But he thought that he had to go somewhere else to find what he already had. And you know, sometimes that happens to people. They spend their life looking for something, looking for happiness, and only to find out that it's right where they're at. They just weren't looking for it because it was so covered up. This applies to marriage, job, to the local church. You know what? There will always be somebody more pretty there ought to be somebody more attractive. There ought to be somebody that's a little bit better at life thinking like you like them. You're always going to find people. And if you're always searching for that, you're never going to be happy in what you're in. If you want somebody to be something they're not, it's not going to work. You've got to learn contentment. You've got to look that there's always going to be something better somewhere else, but you've got to learn to be content. That's true about a job. I have a friend that just seems to be in a job for a couple of years, and he's always moving, he's always looking for the next thing. He can never be content. He's always reaching forward. And there's nothing wrong with being, wanting to advance yourself, but he's always looking for the pot of gold. I know an older couple that during their lifetime, they had wonderful jobs, they had great opportunities, and yet they were always looking for something that would bring them the pot of gold for them and their family. And today, they have nothing. And if it wasn't for their children, they wouldn't be able to have the life that they have. It's sad. You're always going to be empty if you're always looking for the happiness in things. You're not going to find it running from here to there. You're not going to find the perfect church. You're not going to find the perfect preacher. You're not going to find the perfect congregation. And if you're looking for it, it doesn't exist. It does exist. That congregation does exist. But it ain't on earth. It's in heaven. And we have to learn to adjust. We have to learn to live within what's best for God and what's best for you. And then to try to make it work for us. Sometimes people find themselves miserable because that's the way they like it. And misery loves company. And there's nothing you can do to make people like that happen. And you'll spin your wheels in a lifetime trying to find happiness when happiness is right within your grasp if you learn a lesson. I want to leave you this morning with a couple of thoughts, and then we'll conclude this week. True enduring happiness cannot be found apart from God. Apart from trusting God, you will not find happiness. Read Jeremiah chapter 17, verse 5. Get freedom from his rule. Remember the prodigal son? He couldn't wait for his dad to die. He wanted his inheritance, and he wanted it right now. And his father gave it to him. And he took it to a far country, and he lived. And he prospered. And then he began to be in want. When all his money was gone, all his friends were gone, he began to be in want. And the Bible says he was in the pig pen, feeding the husks to the swine, which would be an abomination to a Jew. And he was eating the husks that he would feed the swine. And the Bible says in verse 17 that he came to himself. What's that mean? That he came to himself. He looked at where he really was, how he got there, and where he was, and he didn't like where he was at. But he understood that he put himself there, and he said, I'm going to determine to go back to my father, and I'm going to say, I've sinned in God's sight, I've sinned in your sight, make me as one of your hired servants, I'm not even worthy to be called your son. You know what he did? He saw himself for what he really was. And sometimes that's what has to happen. We have to see ourselves like we really are, and see where we're really at before we can get better. But then you got the ungodly Gentiles in Romans chapter 1. They worship the creature more than the creator. They have taken God out of their memory. They've taken God out of their consciousness. And where did it lead them? It led them to more and more brazen idolatry, ungodliness, worldliness, until they consume themselves with their sin. We're seeking to be different from God who made us and to be what God would have us to be. Doesn't work. If we try to make ourselves more than what God wanted us to be, we're going to find unhappiness, pain, and in the end, we're going to be lost. Our happiness will never rise above one's value. Our expectations of things in this life may let us down. Disappointment will come. Thus our life, our love, our trust, and our hope must be based on God and hope. And if our hope and our trust is not based there, then life will be a miserable existence. Don't let your happiness depend on something that you may lose. If you base your happiness on temporal things can be taken away from you. Riches, wealth, good health, prosperity, all of it fleeting. And if we place our hope in that, then we're going to have problems when those things are gone. Please take your song books and turn to the song that Brother Mel has selected. And tonight, Lord willing, we'll conclude with looking at God's answer to what will make a person happy. You know, we live in a world where we're bombarded daily in looking out for something. In looking out for what makes me happy and content. But no one knows the answer to that better than the one who created you. The one who created you, the one that created this world, he can give you the best recipe to help you be happy in this life, to be productive, to be effective, to be efficient, to be an influence for good, an example for good, and how to raise your children and enjoy your marriage, and how to be joyful in all the blessings that God gave you. God has the answer to all of it. You just have to trust him. If you're here and you're not a Christian, you need to begin that walk with God by trusting him that if you'll render obedience to his plan, hearing the word of God, believing it, repenting of your sin, confessing his name, and submitting to baptism, contact the blood of Christ, that he'll add you to his church, he'll make you part of his kingdom, he'll wipe the slate clean, he'll make you one of his children, and you will have the blessing of calling him Father, and you will have the blood of Christ that you can petition in any form by just seeking his prayer and asking.
And God will once again reestablish you and reconcile you to him. All the blessings of this life mean nothing if you don't appreciate the one who made it so. God made life, and the Bible says that he came that we might have life more abundantly. And if we can help you in any way with your Christian walk with God, we're here to do so as together we stand as we sing.